Hello, listener, wherever you are, whoever you may be. Welcome to the latest episode. I don't know what number episode it is. It's just the latest episode of the Zeitgeist Tapes, in which me, Stephen Fielding, currently a professor of political history, and my colleague, Emma Burnell, journalist, author, dramatist. What else are you?
My line at the moment is journalist, consultant and playwright.
That sounds pretty classy, right? So Emma and I, we discuss pretty much random sort of takings from popular culture and in some instances unpopular culture, which raise interesting issues about politics with a capital P, but also sometimes with a little p. Hopefully they're entertaining, the podcast that is. Sometimes the things we discuss are not at all entertaining.
But that's more entertaining for the podcast because we get to slag them off.
possibly, and we're never spoken to again by the people that have made these things. But today, in this particular podcast, we're going to talk about the film, the 2016 film called The Founder, which... when Emma and I were trying to think through what we should talk about, and I was desperately trying to put off having to talk about GBH, which we will be talking about next month.
That's on tape now, Steve. You can't take it back.
Yes. Yeah. I was going through my sort of random Prime kind of list. You know, you get that thing that comes up, all those different lists. And I'd been kind of looking at what's The Founder? I mean, it's got... what's his face in? I should know who the lead actor is. Michael Keaton, who he's been in some good things. He's been in some not so good things. And I thought, well, what's that about? And then after a couple of weeks, I clicked on and I just randomly watched it. I had nothing better to do. And so I will tell you what the film's about, because I thought this is an interesting thing. We could talk about this. The Founder, which passed me by completely when it came out.
I actually saw it in the cinema.
Emma saw it in the cinema. Those were the days when one could properly do that. In 2016, I started watching it. It's a film about the person, Ray Kroc, who purports to have been the founder of McDonald's, right? That great American and now international institution. And it's about the story of how he becomes the founder of McDonald's, even though he isn't the founder of McDonald's, and it's how he comes from being a character that, I mean, for O-level I did Death of a Salesman, so I know the Death of a Salesman is kind of imprinted on my brain.
You may have done that for O-level, my love, but I did it in real life. I've done door-to-door sales. I did telesales for 4 years. Death of a Salesman and even more Glengarry Glen Ross,
right,
speak to me on a very deep level.
Yes. So Ray Kroc in the film starts off very much like the Willie Loman character in Death of a Salesman. He's trying to sell a kind of a multi mixer, a milkshake mixer to fast food outlets in early 1950s America. And he isn't doing very well. So it's a very dispiriting kind of outline about his life. He's someone who's been trying to sell all kinds of things to people that don't want the things that he's trying to sell, all kinds of wild ideas. So he's a bit of a loser, although he's doing relatively well. You know, he's got a house and everything. He's not on poverty row, but it's a sad, sad story. And then he suddenly discovers there's some crazy fast food outlet somewhere in California, San Bernardino, California, that wants six of his multi-mixers when he can't sell one, you know, across all of Middle America. And he's just so kind of, this is wrong. This can't be right. So he travels all the way to San Bernardino to see who these crazy people are that actually do want six. No, they now want eight of his multi-mixers. And he sees the number one, the first ever McDonald's, run by these two brothers. And he sees how wonderfully, you know, the hamburgers are produced efficiently, cheaply, quickly, cleanly. It's a revelation to him that they've found a new method of how to produce hamburgers, because his experience at fast food outlets up to this point, which is extensive, is they're rubbish. You know, they're no good. They don't even get your orders right. And he tries to get them, the two brothers, to agree to franchising, which they reluctantly do. And so the story is really about how this guy, Ray Kroc, becomes McDonald's, kind of becomes the wolf. He's the wolf in the door and takes over.
And is literally described as such by the Dick McDonald character.
Dick McDonald, yes.
Wonderful Nick Offerman.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we could talk more about who, you know, the brothers and everything. And then ultimately, he kind of takes over the whole thing about McDonald's. He gives it a set of values, which we can talk about. And in the end, buys them out. And they get $1 million each, which, you know, in the later 50s, kind of a big deal. But it's a defeat for the brothers, because the brothers have a vision, and it's not the vision that Ray Kroc has. And so that's what interested me about the film, that it's kind of about capitalism. It's about two different kinds of capitalism, one that succeeds. And also it evokes in my mind something we talked about, not necessarily last Christmas, but the Christmas before, Christmas Carol, which is also Dickens's version of, well, there's a nice capitalism and there's a nasty capitalism. And in Christmas Carol, the nice capitalism prevails. But in this one, the nasty one prevails. So it's about different kinds of capitalism, but it's also about America and about how America thinks of itself. So that's kind of what made me think this is a lot going on. It's more than simply about the guy that took over a hamburger franchise, right? So Emma, you saw it a while ago.
Also watched it again for this podcast, yes. Because listeners, I do my homework for you. I mean, 2016, when it was made, was really kind of the height of the Main Street versus Wall Street debate. And that is what ultimately this film is about. And you say that Ray Kroc didn't invent McDonald's, but the McDonald's that you and I know, Ray Kroc absolutely invented. You know, the McDonald brothers invented the speedy system that allowed that McDonald's to become a franchise and a flourishing corporation. But they just wanted to have that in their one little restaurant. They had no ambition beyond that. They were your classic high street mom and pop store that is first of all taken over and then put out of business by a big corporation. It's a morality tale about Main Street versus Wall Street. Although I have to say the morality was slightly unclear sometimes. Were you supposed to like Ray Kroc? Were you not supposed to like Ray Kroc? Were you supposed to think that the brothers were right in their complete lack of ambition, or were you supposed to judge them for it? It didn't give you easy answers, which I think was a correct choice, to be fair. Because there are arguments to be made on both sides. The ubiquity of McDonald's is a different thing from whether Ray Kroc did the right thing with that business or not, if you see what I mean.
You're right. I mean, all good sort of films, all good piece of art allow you a space to think. It doesn't just tell you what to think. But I think broadly speaking, I'm not sure if the two brothers lacked ambition. Because I think at the start, they say, well, we did try to franchise, but we couldn't keep the quality. Yeah. So they're people that want to keep the quality of what they're doing. I mean, although they were selling 15-cent hamburgers really quickly, the product was great. I mean, that's something that Kroc was also impressed by. So I said, this is the best hamburger I've ever had, right? So it's a really good product, which they produce in very carefully controlled. The speedy system is very carefully controlled, but it's high quality and they care. I mean, these two guys care about what they're doing.
Absolutely.
And they invest themselves in it. And so
what's interesting is that Ray Kroc also cares about the quality. He gets cross when some of his franchisees aren't following the proper system and are, you know, just slopping out any old thing, because actually McDonald's is a very clear thing that he wants it to be, which is a high quality hamburger served quickly. And, you know, when people start adding stuff to their menus, he's like, no, we don't do chicken. And although later on he is convinced to use powdered milkshakes.
That is kind of a crucial dividing line, isn't it?
And that is, I think, the moment where the corporate rape is over. And is largely convinced to do so by the woman who then becomes his second wife, who is the wife at the time of one of his early franchisees.
Yes, there's some interesting gender stuff going on. It's not that important to the film, but it's some interesting gender stuff. There's an echo in the sense that Ray Kroc takes over McDonald's in the same way that he takes over another man's wife, right? The woman that he then becomes his wife is more useful to him. The wife that he starts the film with, she just wants him at home. You know, why are you going around, you know, doing all this stuff, Ray? You know, why can't we just go down the club and enjoy ourselves?
But also, and interestingly, gender-wise, the second wife is ambitious and clever and wants to be out there working.
Yes.
And the first wife is a traditional housewife.
Actually,
in some ways, there's quite a modern message of the more attractiveness of this modern woman than the traditional stereotype.
I mean, I don't think he necessarily comes across as a misogynist or anything like that, whether a misogynist who doesn't like women or, as you know, Dominic Raab would have it, a misogynist who doesn't like men.
At the time, he actively seeks Jewish investors, investors from the Jewish community. He goes to a Jewish community centre to find new franchisees.
I also noted in the film when he's selling the idea of to the potential franchisees, this is meant to be based on a true story. I mean, this actually happened, but whether it happened in the way that the film purports, I can't possibly say. But there's quite a lot of non-white faces in that, and I don't know whether that reflects the reality of McDonald's as an enterprise in the 50s, in the earliest days when he was taking it in that direction, Kroc. So I don't know. There are reasons for not liking him at certain points, and the reasons for not liking him, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that the milkshake is a kind of the Rubicon.
Yeah.
Because the boys, the McDonald's boys, they believe, you know, a milkshake should be made from milk, right? even though you've got to keep all the ice cream in refrigerated rooms, which is a huge cost. So Kroc discovers, thanks to the woman who will become his second wife, that you can do it by powder. You don't need milk, you know, in a milkshake. And then so that's a kind of the jumping off point. That's a final moment, really, where McDonald's that we're familiar with, it becomes that, and they start to leave behind the McDonald's as it was in San Bernardino.
One last thing on the second wife. Interesting thing that I thought was quite amusing. In the captions at the end, it said that when after he died, she gave most of his money to NPR, which is an incredibly liberal cause, which I thought was, you know, quite different from the corporate McDonald's ethos.
Yes. I noted that. That was kind of ironic, really. So were they, I mean, so therefore there could be an argument in there for, I mean, Ray Kroc says to the brothers towards the end when he's bought them out, I think, and it's just like, business is war. Right. Yeah. Business is war. And, you know, if somebody wants your help in business, then you don't give it them. You shove them further down. You know, you don't do it. And the Nick Offerman, McDonald's brother, because he's the one that tends to speak most, I think, said, no, we couldn't do that. That's not how we see things. We're Republicans. You know, the McDonald's brothers were Republicans. And Kroc goes, like, he's almost unbelieving that these people can be Republicans and think like that. So it's kind of, it's a dialogue between capitalists and Republicans in some ways. There are different ways
Very similar to the one that the Conservative Party are having at the moment.
Yeah, well, and the Republican Party in the United States did have before Trump,
Trump. You know, the Thatcherism, which I would say is super corporatism, versus the conservatism of Keep the High Street is at the heart of this movie.
Yes. I mean, the irony, and this is where the clip will, I think, be quite useful. The irony kind of is, is that the two McDonald's brothers, who like the, you know, the Main Street kind of capitalists, sort of small scale, nice to everybody, you know, about family, about, you know, kind of locality. That's what they really believe in. Mm. And that Kroc, and this is what he really brings to it. This is why the McDonald's of Kroc is, that's the McDonald's that we know. He kind of linked what their product was, and he invested it with their own values in order to sell it. But then by doing that, it became something else entirely different from what they wanted. So there's a kind of epiphanic moment, which we can't really show on the podcast because it's very visual, but he kind of goes on a little journey, Kroc, in his car, you know, around the small towns of America. And he is kind of been enthused by the arch, you know, the golden arch that one of the two brothers, the Dick character, I think, invents. And he's beguiled by the beauty of that golden arch. And he goes around on his car, in his car around America, around small town America, and he sees, and his journeys, he sees two things, churches and the courthouse. And he sees, this is kind of emblematic of America, but before I paraphrase everything he says, he kind of goes and talks to the brothers and says, I've got a vision. You know, it's partly your vision, but it's my vision about America. So let's just play that clip.
And I drove through a lot of towns, a lot of small towns. They all had two things in common. They had a courthouse and they had a church. On top of the church, got a cross. On top of the courthouse, they'd have a flag. Flags, crosses. Crosses, flags. Driving around, I just cannot stop thinking about this tremendous restaurant. Now, at the risk of sounding blasphemous, forgive me. Those arches have a lot in common with those buildings. A building with a cross on top, what is that? It's a gathering place where decent, wholesome people come together and they share values protected by that American flag. It could be said that that beautiful building flanked by those arches signifies more or less the same thing. It doesn't just say delicious hamburgers inside. They signify family. It signifies community. It's a place where Americans come together to break bread. I am telling you, McDonald's can be the new American church. Feeding bodies, feeding souls, and it ain't just open on Sundays, boys. It's open 7 days a week.
There you go. Quite the speech.
Yeah, that's the heart of it, isn't it, really? When the film sort of presents these McDonald's restaurants, all the different rooms franchised across America, they're a thing of beauty. I mean, it's really nicely filmed. I mean, the whole thing, you know, shows America looking really brilliant, wonderful, you know, verdant, or whatever.
They mix in archive footage as well, don't they, of actual McDonald's being built.
Yeah. I mean, these are very different to the ones that we are familiar with. I mean, they're kind of, you know, McDonald's has gone well off.
Comparatively.
Yeah. I mean, they are like things of beauty, you know, the red, the yellow, the arch, the wonderfully lit. I mean, it's that you can see, you know, when he's drawing parallels between, you know, the church and, you know, the idea of America, it's very beguiling, but also completely false. I mean, that's I think that's the sort of irony of the film. And I guess that's one that is hard to miss, really, that, like I say, the two brothers exemplify those values and yet they lose out to the man who weaponizes those values in order to sell hamburgers.
And what better metaphor is there for the Republican Party than weaponizing values to achieve the opposite?
Oh, political.
That's what we're here for, Stephen.
No, I know. Using culture, to sell hamburgers. I mean, it was just so, when I saw that, I just thought, my God, we've got to talk about this. This is really saying some interesting things about America, how America thinks of itself and how that is inauthentic. Because, I mean, and that's why the title of the film is completely appropriate, because it's called The Founder. It's about Ray Kroc, and he's not the founder, right? it's irony upon irony. So, I saw it like the first time, thought this is a great film, and then I saw it the other day for a second time, and I'm telling you, it does bear a second viewing.
I've watched it twice, and yeah, it really it there's so many interesting themes in there, and it's interesting what you say about America, because I think what America's promise is reinvention. America is a land of immigrants where people go to reinvent themselves. Now, they don't like immigration as much as they used to, or in fact, to be honest, they never liked it. Every wave.
Yeah, never liked it.
But that's who they are. You go to America and you reinvent yourself. America is a young country and it still feels like a young country. And that allows it to have that sense of both. It's like an inauthentic authenticness or authentic inauthenticness. It's, you know, it is what it is, but what it is superficial.
Mm.
And that's partly because it has very few roots. Many, many people's roots are from older countries, and they're explicitly moving away from that.
And embracing this bogus idea of America, which is bogus.
Yeah.
But it's also inspiring, you know.
And then if you take later on in the film, there's a speech he gives about why McDonald's, the name, was what he was so attracted to. And he says, it is America. It's every man. It's, you know, it's who we all want to be. I couldn't have called it Crocs.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't have worked. No one would go to Crocs. Not just because Croc of whatever, but also because it's too Slavic, it's too old, it's an old name, whereas McDonald's is every high street. And
yes.
what his vision of is quite interesting, is that every man vision, but done through a corporation that then puts that every man vision exactly the same on every high street, knocking out the authentic.
Well, yes, I mean, at the end of the film, that's sort of... by the end of the film, I think we know where the filmmakers would like us to be. I mean, in terms of it all, because when he buys out the McDonald's brothers, I mean, one of them is always, I mean, is in hospital. I mean, basically they have to, they can't take it anymore, being betrayed and being hit over the head by this guy. I mean, he says, you know, because he signs a contract which actually prevents him from introducing things like the milkless milkshake, right? So he does that against the contract, but essentially he says to them, actually, yeah, if you sue me, yeah, you're in the right, but you can't afford to sue me because I've got all the money now, right? So they just have to give up, partly through health reasons and just for their own mental health reasons. And as part of the contract which they then sign, he is able to put their own, the original McDonald's in San Bernardino, out of business because they can no longer use their own name, right? And the thing was that the boys, the two McDonald boys, wanted to be able to keep that restaurant because they wanted their own employees to own it, you know, as a kind of gift to them. And Croc wouldn't let them do it, and he put it out of business by putting in one of his McDonald's into San Bernardino. So he doesn't come across as a great guy. And also there's the, in the contract, there's the boys want 1% of all future earnings of the McDonald's corporation, and he says, well, I can't really sell that at the moment, but we'll have to do it on a handshake basis, right? You have to trust me. And you know they're never going to get that 1%, and they never get that 1%, right? But what you were saying about the everyman thing, what he says about McDonald's, interestingly, obviously McDonald's is a white, you know, white Anglo-Saxon, you know, Scottish name, and one of the things which appeals to Croc, who is, of course, therefore he's got an immigrant's name. What appeals to Croc about the McDonald's, the vision of the McDonald's and how they do it at San Bernardino, is he says there's no riffraff. There are no delinquents. There are no young people, you know, smoking, you know, making out, doing all of that. The McDonald's that he wants is, you know, I mean, it looks predominantly white, but it's respectable. It's families. It's middle America. It's those kinds of values. So it's a very particular take on American values, and others are excluded from it.
Yes, and I think if you think about even the McDonald's of today, you don't hang out in McDonald's the way you might in a cafe. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You eat your food and you go. You don't, you know, you don't take time over it. That's not, you know, and that's what they were deliberately trying to do. You know, they didn't have the music so that the kids would hang around for hours and hours, not by much. And scaring off the nice middle-aged families. So I think even to this day, that's the case. But also, if you look at how McDonald's still advertises itself, they did an advert a few years ago about coffee.
Yeah.
And buying a coffee at McDonald's. And everyone who went in there was ordinarily dressed. There was no one who was really sharply dressed. There was no one who was really scruffy. And they all went in, and then they got and they'd been to various sort of posh coffee shops and been bamboozled by the various offers of insanely different coffees. Mm. Then they go to McDonald's and they just say, "Can I have a coffee, please?" And they go, "Yes, absolutely, here you go." And that, for me, is exactly those same values that the McDonald brothers were trying to bring in all those years back. And there's a really interesting through line of that sort of simplicity of offer.
Yes. Well, it's a while since I've been in one. I mean, we'd go in with children and we'd eat. And I'd always have a filet au fish. I still don't know how you really meant to pronounce it.
It's a filet.
Yeah, but I say filet. But anyway.
McDonald's,
you don't. Well, maybe some of the posher ones in Manchester, I don't know. And so, yeah, you're right. It's sort of middle ground, you know, non-pretentious, blah, blah, blah. But the second time I saw the film, because, you know, the first time you go, oh, they're the good guys, you know, the McDonald's brothers, and then Greg Crocky's kind of like the bad guy. I mean, it's more complicated than that, as we've suggested, but essentially it. And then I was thinking, you know, actually the second time I noticed, I thought, because the speedy system that they've produced, it's what Henry Ford did to the production line to produce cars, right? Yeah. They break down the process of making a hamburger to its essential elements, and one person does one part of that, right? So, you know, put the sauces on or this or that. And so it's very much like, you know, Charlie Chaplin in modern times, you know, doing the screw in the thing. And that's a deeply alienating thing, right? To be in that, in you're part of a machine. And as they said, the brothers say, and Croc says, and others, and I think somebody else takes on that sentiment. If you've time to lean, there's time to clean, right? So you're always on it. You're always doing it.
And again, it's an interesting contrast, because if they're supposed to be the high street mom and pop type, those were supposed to be more skilled jobs, and they took the skill out. So actually, there is a grey area there with the speedy system. They may be talking about the essential quality of the burger, but not the essential quality of those jobs.
No, yeah, they were kind of... So there's a continuity between the two brothers and Croc, which maybe, you know, you might see the differences, but there is definitely a continuity there. And, you know, as Mark said, you know, about capitalism, all that is solid melts into air. So it all kind of, once you start down the road, you can't stop. You're on the road to, oh well, ultimately Sotis revolution, obviously Marx's view. Not quite worked out like that.
Any day, Steve, any day.
Yeah, any day. Yeah, just finishing McDonald's, then we'll have one. Okay.
Just gotta fill the car up first.
Yes, yeah. So that's an interesting theory about why things are going on like they are. So yeah, there's lots of really interesting things. I mean, first, it's a really well produced film. I mean, you know, old Michael, the man whose name why can't I remember his surname?
I don't know. No. I can't either, but
anyway, the star who is
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton, yeah, it's a kind of appropriate.
Sorry, I thought you were going for the director. I do apologise.
No. I come into this without any context at all. Yeah, he kind of plays kind of anonymous kind of characters himself, so maybe that's, I'm trying to find a reason why my memory is so rubbish on his name. I mean, he's really good. I mean, they're all really good. Anonymous. Sorry,
Beetlejuice.
I'm thinking later, after Batman.
Yeah,
after
I mean, Batman. His renaissance has been that kind of slightly grumpy everyman, hasn't it? I mean, yeah, Birdman is very much that.
Yes, yes. Another nice film. But yeah, it's a really, really well-produced film. What I was doing in 2016, I don't know, but it passed me by. But it's on Amazon Prime, so put aside your principles about how Amazon treats the workers. Isn't that ironic? Yes, very ironic. It's not ironic at all. Yeah, I mean, I would say it's definitely worth a view. And yes, and a bit of a ponder. Any last thoughts, Emma? Are we all thoughted out?
I feel quite thoughted out. I mean, I think it's really, really interesting just to look at the different models of capitalism and the different routes that it could and couldn't take, and the feeling of inevitability of the Ray Crocs of the world, which we get now because we're at the other end of it. But was it inevitable? And is it reversible? These are the questions for maybe a sequel.
Ooh, yes. That's the story of how McDonald's has tried to negotiate global warming and all of that, and trying to appeal to, you know, they have going green, literally going green on their outward sort of street furniture kind of stuff. So anyway, it's a great film, and possibly an underrated and often ignored film, but one definitely worth a view. And on that bombshell, we'll bring this episode of The Zeitgeist Tapes to a close. I'm really looking forward to watching GBH, or how many episodes?
Quite a few.
Yeah, I can't remember. It just goes on and on. But, you know, nonetheless, we'll talk about GBH in the next episode. We're fully committed and enthusiastic about that. So it just behooves me. Yeah, okay. It behooves me to remind our listener that this has been a political human production, that we are greatly indebted to Lord Stuart Wood for the theme tune. And if you could possibly rate and review us on whatever platform you listen to us on, we'd be immensely grateful.
Small cheese if you do. From me, not Steve. Steve's making a face now. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.